Welcome, all you believers, idealists, skeptics, and all those who question the universe around them. I'm Bailey.
And I'm Ty. Welcome to Cult Talks Conspiracy.
Before we unseal this file, we wanted to fill you in on some really exciting news.
For as little as $3 a month, you can be a part of our pursuit to hashtag question everything by clicking the support the show link found in the show notes of each episode.
Your support would mean the absolute world to us and help us dive deeper into the mind-blowing conspiracies you, Ty, and I all love.
Thank you for joining us, seeking the truth, and as always, question everything.
Hear that, Essie? You hear that?
Yeah. Stop yelling at me, podcast mom.
Essie is our savior. He edits it.
Thank you, podcast dad. I'll remember this forever, Bailey.
You're listening to a Cult Talk Network podcast.
File access granted.
Welcome, all you believers, idealists, skeptics, and all those who question the universe around them. I'm Ty.
And I'm Bailey.
And this is Cult Talks Conspiracy. File 027, 27 of these things.
Oh, man.
We got out here. So how was your birthday, Bailey?
It was nice. It was wonderful. Nice. Yes.
Good.
Yes. I didn't quite have a headache afterward. But I definitely feel like I'm getting older. So yes, I feel wiser.
It sucks. So, yeah, it sucks.
I like to look at getting older as like you, and like you're gaining experience, like you're becoming more established within the world. So, or at least that's what I have to tell myself to make peace with the fact that I'm now getting gray hair. So that's what we're going with.
Yeah, getting old sucks. It's a big wake up call when you try to do things that you used to be able to do with such ease when you're younger.
You know, when I really noticed I was getting older, it was when I started to like crouch down, and not only was I making like the old person sound like the ugh, but like also like it would just be pop 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 pop. Like all the knees and hips.
I'm
like, oh good lord, this is interesting.
Yeah, I have a really bad like bum knee on my right side where it just like gives out. Gives out all the time, just where I used to like work out really heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah, my ankle's like that.
Today we're talking about something that is very near and dear to me. Have you ever watched The Simpsons? Do you know much about The Simpsons?
I do not know much of The Simpsons. However, I had heard.
Shocked. Call
I know,
shocked.
Right? I know. Everyone's so surprised. But I have heard, pray tell, of what we're going to talk about today. So I'm very excited.
Yeah, The Simpsons, one of my all-time favorite shows. Don't know when the first time I watched it, you know, as a kid, but man, it's a show I watch regular bait. Like no hyperbole. Every night when I go to bed, Simpsons.
It's awesome.
So I have so much Simpsons merch. I'm trying to collect all the Playmates, the World of Simpson action figures right now. It's a deep line, easily 150, 200 plus figures, but I'm trying to get all those. All kinds of shit. I love The Simpsons. My favorite show of all time. Newer episodes. Not a big fan of the newer episodes, especially
Really?
The Disney stuff. Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the way that... My favorite stuff is the 90s. I like the 90s seasons. So, like, Simpsons, like, 1 through, like, I'd say, like, 16 is where I really, really like The Simpsons. They're just kind of, you know, just, you know... diminishing returns. When you have a show that runs 800 plus episodes, they're not all going to be fantastic. But those early seasons are great. Mm-hmm. And luckily, we're talking about a lot of the early seasons today, because that's where the main focus of a lot of the supposed Simpsons predictions comes from.
Nice.
Is a lot of the earlier years, which makes sense, because if they're predicting a future, you know, it's all as you go on. That you're going to see less and less predictions because you're getting in the future and you got to wait for those to come true. So
right.
It makes sense that more episodes are from the past.
Yes. Have they switched writers since like now and then, or has it been like the same team all the way through?
They switch writers pretty frequently.
Oh, really?
Like there's some key guys and producers, but they have a, you know, a pretty broad range of writers.
Nice.
You know, it comes, like I said, diminishing returns. You can only have so many original ideas before you just start kind of, you know, putting just random stuff out.
Right. Yeah.
You know, 800 some episodes, pretty difficult to keep keep on your A game. But there are like some hidden gems every now and then. They'll come out with an episode that's really good, but then there's a lot of episodes that are near unwatchable. Yeah, there's some bad ones here in the later seasons. Since they've been purchased by Disney, there's been some just really shitty stuff.
Shocker. Yeah. Shocked Pikachu yeah. face. They got purchased by Disney and went under. Oh, no. Damn.
Yeah, not great stuff. And then also they get kind of like, they've been sucked into like the, you know, the PC culture kind of thing. Mm. Like one of my favorite characters, Apu, is no longer able to be on The Simpsons because he's deemed problematic. One of the greatest characters in TV history.
I feel like he's fantastic.
He was the shop owner for the Quickie Mart. One of the greatest characters in Simpsons history.
Was he the one that was kind of like gray haired and like just
weird? No, that's Mr. Burns.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Apu is Indian.
Oh, okay.
Voiced by Hank Azaria, one of the great voice actors of our time. Yeah, they got sucked into that and had to unfortunately let him go, that character go, which really sucked. But yeah, still, I love The Simpsons so much. Great, great show. No doubt about it, one of the most influential television shows in the history of all television. I mean, there's no other show that even matches what this show has done as far as like revenue and pop culture. It's amazing. It's what they've done in the last, like, you know, 30 some years. It's incredible. I don't think there will ever be a show that even rivals what The Simpsons is or was or has been. I don't think any show ever rival what they've done. It's truly a phenomenon. But and you know, when else am I going? You know, I'm gonna ramble because when else am I gonna be able to talk about The Simpsons? We don't have a Simpsons podcast. We don't have. It doesn't fit. Bruce Campbell's never been on The Simpsons, which shocks me. That blows my mind. The Bruce Campbell has never had a guest spot on The Simpsons because they have a guest pretty much every episode now.
Yeah,
they have a guest. It blows my mind. Lucy Lawless has been on The Simpsons.
Yeah.
I have her figure from The Simpsons in my collection. It's just crazy. It always blows my mind that Bruce has never been on The Simpsons. I always say like the two things that he has yet to do that he needs to be on his bucket list is The Simpsons and Saturday Night Live. I'm so surprised he's never been on those two things. But we don't have, you know, he The Simpsons doesn't fit anything else. Mm-hmm. But I was like, man, there is a pretty well-known conspiracy that The Simpsons are predicting the future, which I think is super interesting. And we're going to go into that here. And we're going to talk about three in particular when we get to it. There is a huge number of supposed predictions. One of the main things that most people, if you're really into this conspiracy and you're really into, if you hear it on a base level, one of the main things that people should take into account is predictions versus influence. Because there seems to be these supposed predictions you can kind of look at as like, was that them predicting the future or did they say something then someone took influence from that? Like a lot of people talk about Lady Gaga did the halftime show for the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of years earlier before that, The Simpsons had on an episode of The Simpsons, Lady Gaga was the halftime show for the Super Bowl in that universe. Mm-hmm. And it was a very similar kind of, she was dressed the same kind of similarly and all that. But I would say it's more of influence. She probably she voiced herself on that episode, mm-hmm. so maybe she took like, The Simpsons, you know, said I was going to be the Super Bowl halftime show. Now I'm Super Bowl. Maybe I'll take a little influence from that, mm-hmm. stuff like that. But yeah, we're going to talk about it here in File 027, The Simpsons predictions. Are you ready to talk about The Simpsons some more, Bailey?
I'm so excited. This might make me go out and, you know, watch The Simpsons for a nice little bit.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's the main reason I have Disney Plus is for The Simpsons. The Simpsons, they have every episode. They have every episode on Disney Plus.
Oh wow!
So that's the main reason I have. Because I'm like, that was the selling point to me to get Disney Plus.
Yeah.
I like some like Disney things, but I didn't like it enough where I was like, oh, I got to get Disney Plus. I like the Gargoyles and X-Men. Obviously, those are the two of my favorite shows, but they weren't enough for me to like get Disney Plus. Mm-hmm. But when they announced Disney Plus comes with every episode of The Simpsons, well, I got to get Disney Plus
this
now.
This is a done deal now. So.
It was a done deal. I was like, oh, you know, $10.99 a month or $9.99 a month, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, I'll pay that for Simpsons every night when I go to bed.
There you go.
So that's why it gets streamed every night at my house.
I love that. We're like that with River Monsters.
Okay.
Yeah, we watch River Monsters to go to bed. And it's either that or Warhammer podcast, guys. Like, Ben has control over what, because I'll just zone it out. I could sleep through a train. It's no problem.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Ancient aliens. Yeah. Because, yeah, oh, yeah, I pick ancient aliens. That one's me. That one is me.
I can't get in. I have a hard time getting there. I like the idea of those shows. Like, I like the idea of shows like Ancient Aliens or Monster Quest and Finding Bigfoot. I like the idea of those shows, but I can only watch so many episodes before it's like, it's the same shit. I love Monster. I remember back in the day when I was in high school, I loved Monster Quest, but it's always the same thing. It's like, here's this monster. Let's go find it.
Yeah.
We didn't find it, but we found this really vague piece of evidence that we're going to tout as being definitive.
Right.
Yes. Like Bigfoot shows, they bore me. I like documentaries, like, you know, like examinations. I hate like the let's go find this thing. They never do. If they find Bigfoot, it's not going to be on this show. It's going to be like a national news immediately.
Oh, yeah.
It's not going to be wait till next season on finding Bigfoot. It's like, no, when they find Bigfoot, it's going to be global news immediately within the seconds of it happening.
It better be.
Yeah, so I get really bored of those kind of things. Yeah,
and sometimes,
but I like the idea of them.
Yes, and sometimes they do kind of push that envelope a little bit, where it's like, well, this is what it really is, but we're going to tweak it just a bit, and we're going to focus on that really nice tweak to make it fit. And I'm like, guys, I need you to understand that, like, that's not what I'm here for. But yeah, I'm with you. Like,
they're very tedious,
and can be, but they're so cool too, and like, it's cool to find some
cool stuff.
It could lead you down different rabbit holes, like
Small Town Monsters, one of my favorite little groups that do documentaries and stuff. They have like an On the Trail series I'm not a big fan of, because it's like the, you know, we're all going to find Bigfoot. You're not going to find Bigfoot. I like when they'll do the Flatwoods Monster or stuff like that. Oh, yeah. But they'll be like, it's not a documentary about finding it. It's like documenting this creature. I like that kind of stuff. I like when they're just like documenting a thing. I don't like the whole let's go find this thing. So you never are. But we're going to try to find out if the Simpsons predicted the future. File 027. Bailey, you ready to unseal this case file?
I'm ready.
All right, file 027. Dope! The Simpsons knew it all along. There we go. So, The Simpsons, I think that a fun thing to do if you're listening to this episode now, take a shot every time I say The Simpsons, because it's going to be a lot.
Someone's going to get alcohol poisoning.
It's going to be a lot.
Someone's going to get alcohol poisoning and blame us. No.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, this is going to be a long one. Like I said, the way I structured this, we're going to talk about three main ones. There is a ton of different predictions. I bought a book. It's called The Simpsons Secret. By Lydia Pulteney and James Hicks.
Oh, okay.
And it is a book all about Simpsons predictions. A lot of them I already knew, but I was like, I'm going to see if there's anything I didn't. But I picked out three because I think they're the most interesting, kind of dissect how these things line up. But there's three main ones that I think are you have to talk about if you're talking about the Simpsons predicting the future. And we're going to talk about them. So before we begin our deep dive into the perfectly cromulent web of supposed Simpsons predictions, I think we should, for the few, Bailey,
yep,
who aren't familiar with The Simpsons, start with some history.
Thank you.
And also, when else am I going to have the opportunity to talk about The Simpsons? I'm going to just milk it for what I can. Talk about it.
And you have a co-host that's not really watched it before. So
exactly.
It's the perfect
exactly.
storm.
So,
it's wonderful.
So I'm going to go ahead and just talk about The Simpsons.
Yes,
Matt Groening, born in 1954 in Portland, Oregon, moved to Los Angeles, California after attending Evergreen State College. Ever since he was a child, he had always drawn cartoons. He continued this into the college. And when living in L.A. in the late 70s, he still continued to draw cartoons. Embiggened by his real-life experiences, he created the comic Life in Hell.
Oh.
About an anthropomorphic bunny rabbit living in L.A. And it focused on such themes as sex and alienation and fear of the unknown and existentialism. It was a very deep comic that he kind of put a lot of his own fears and anxieties into, especially about living in L.A., mm-hmm. which is a pretty wild city. The comic was self-published by Groening and sold at a local record store. And it was here that it would catch the eye of James L. Brooks, a producer of the Tracy Ullman Show. The Tracy Ullman Show was a late-night talk show in the 80s, kind of like Carson or Conan now or Leno. It was one of those things. Mm-hmm. It's a late-night show. Brooks had been looking for a series of animated shorts to follow commercial breaks, and he thought Life in Hell would be perfect. So he approached Groening with the idea.
Mm-hmm.
He quickly went from Groening, that's a world changing proposal. I mean, you're going from self publishing your comic book in a local record store mm-hmm. to having some guy approach you about having it animated for a major TV show. He quickly went from excited to cautious as he realized animating Life in Hell would mean he'd have to give up the publication rights.
Oh no!
Yep. And at this time, he considered Life in Hell to be his life work.
Yeah. It sounds like he had a lot of, I don't want to say like projection, but definitely a lot of like similarities with
his own life. Yeah, it was a very personal mm-hmm. comic to him.
Mm-hmm.
And he thought that was his life's work.
Yeah. I would love to ask him or find out more on why he chose a bunny rabbit for that. Like, is it a representation? No,
that's very interesting.
Is it a representation of his own innocence going into L.A.? Or am I psychoanalyzing a little bit too much? I don't know. I need answers there.
Bunnies have this weird, there's a weird connection between bunnies and the Simpsons.
Really?
So, are you familiar with what the Simpsons characters look like?
Yes.
So, you know Marge.
Yes.
The mom with mm-hmm. the big blue hair.
Yes.
So, in the earth, there's a lot of things in the first season of the Simpsons. Like, when the Simpsons was conceived, there's a lot of ideas that were kicked around that never came to fruition. And one of the ideas, really weird idea, was the reason Marge has the big, tall blue hair is because at a certain point in the show, it was going to be revealed that Marge was actually an anthropomorphic bunny rabbit.
Oh, my gosh.
Who was using the hair to hide her ears.
OMG.
Really weird. there's the Simpsons arcade game. It was a very popular game in the 90s. And there's an animation cell. Whenever Marge, the character Marge, when you're playing her, if she gets injured or like electrocuted or something like that, you'll see it like her flash as a skeleton, you know, when she gets injured. And that skeleton has bunny ears. And that's the only reference of this that's ever like made it into any of the Simpsons stuff. But that was like an early thing he had was that it was going to be, I think it was his way of maybe introducing later the Life in Hell lore into the Simpsons. It never came to be. But yeah, there's a really weird thing with the Simpsons and bunnies. There's a sex ed video that gets shown to the Simpsons
mm-hmm.
kids in school. It's like Fuzzy Bunny.
Oh,
it's scary, but it's a sex ed video about these two bunnies that, you know, teach sex ed. It's like an animated video in the Simpsons world. But yeah, there's weird things of that. I don't know. That's I don't know what it is with bunnies, but yeah, that's a weird connection. So, you know, he was concerned that he was going to lose the rights to his life's work. So on the day he was to give his pitch for the Life in Hell shorts, while sitting in the lobby of James L. Brooks' office, he quickly created a new pitch.
What?
So he's in the office, like, waiting to go in for his meeting. And he's, you know, he's having all this anxiety. He's finally like, all right, I'm going to try something different. So he, on a whim, creates a new pitch. This pitch became Groening's typical dysfunctional family. A family of five, all named after members of his own family. So Homer, Marge, Lisa, Maggie, those are actually his, you know, parents' siblings' names.
Oh, wow.
The character he based on himself, however, he named Bart, which was an anagram for brat.
Ah.
Because he was a very bratty child.
Okay.
So he changed it to Bart so it wouldn't be Matt. So that was the pitch he came up with. He named these characters the Simpsons. And they loved it. They were like, this is perfect. this yes. this will work. It's not life and hell, but it'll work. It's relatable. You know, it's something that we can use and we can do all kinds of different stories and mm-hmm. bits with.
Talk,
so go ahead.
Talk about like just like I don't know, shitting diamonds. Like, I mean, not saying like he was like,
absolutely.
I mean, just the thought of like the stress of coming up with something and then going out on like a whim and, you know, presenting it and then them being like, I love it. Like, I couldn't even imagine that moment. So, I mean, that's
and what it became too is it's insane that, you know, the success it would have for being something he literally just like camped with on a whim, just, you know, in a rush, just made a pitch.
Beautiful.
And what it would later become. So using basic sketches by Groening, on April 19th, 1987, the Tracy Ullman Show debuted The Simpsons. The shorts ran on a regular basis and were very popular. So popular that 1989, the family would get adapted into its own half-hour show for Fox called, of course, The Simpsons. On December 17th, 1989, a pilot disguised as a holiday special, The Simpsons Roasting on an Open Fire premiered on Fox. Actually, I have that on VHS. I have the I have that single episode on a VHS that I put out like every year for my like a little for Christmas decor. So really, it's not my favorite episode, but it's pretty cool. The Simpsons originally, when it first like the first season, like the earlier episodes for sure, was a lot more grounded in reality than what the show would later become. Like it really was like just like a sitcom you would see, you know, All in the Family, Married with Children, things like that, just in animated form. That was like what it originally was. It wasn't fully taking advantage of the cartoon aspect. It was just telling like real life stories. Cause there's like some wild things mm-hmm. in the first early episodes of The Simpsons, like Homer getting, you know, laid off and like feeling the stress of like not being able to provide for his family and like contemplating suicide.
Oh my.
Like that, you know, to try, you know, in hopes that might, you know, alleviate his family's financial woes, like things like that. I mean, it's like the early episodes of The Simpsons are like so grounded. It's wild. It's a cartoon.
Yeah.
It was viewed by 13.4 million homes and became the second highest rated show on Fox. After the premiere of the episode, Bart the Genius, on January 14th, 1990, the show officially became a series. So it was originally just like advertised as a holiday special.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just such a success. Mm-hmm. They were like, all right, it's a show now. Like, it's a series. Since then, everything started coming up Milhouse. The show has received 35 Primetime Emmy Awards.
Wow.
34 Annie Awards, which is an animation award, and 2 Peabody Awards, which is a writing award.
Oh, wow.
It was all stretched into the world of comics, video games, and $1 billion-plus merchandising industry. All the merch. They have, if you go on eBay and you type in like The Simpsons merch, the things that they put The Simpsons on, especially in the early years, is insane. You can find, they have a Simpsons charcoal grill. They have Simpson coolers, koozies, spatulas, coffee makers, bottle openers. I mean, a Rubik's cube of Homer's head. If you look up anything, there is more than likely a Simpsons branded version of that. Picture frames, phone chargers, bottle openers, cups, plates, all that shit, utensils, you know, fork, spoon, knife. You want something with The Simpsons on. It is insane how much, like, they were just putting out Simpsons on everything. In the early years, it was hard in the 90s. To find any store that wasn't carrying Simpsons merchandise. Cause it was that people could relate to. They dealt with like real issues, but it wasn't just some guy. It was this really colorful yellow, like cartoons that people could relate to. Mm-hmm. And they looked very appealing. The stories were really good. So, I mean, in the early 90s, especially, and it's still today, you can find most stores will have something of the Simpsons on them. Simpsons bowling balls, Simpson energy drinks, Simpson candy bars, chips, cereal. Mm-hmm. It is mind-boggling. I think if you search the Simpsons merchandise on eBay, you might break the search engine because there's so much shit on there.
That's awesome.
Blankets, full chairs, like recliners. You can get a Homer Simpson recliner if you wanted. Nuts.
That's awesome.
It's insane.
I now have a endless catalog of things to get you for Christmas time.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, it wouldn't be hard.
I love it.
Like I said, the action figures. I'm trying to collect all the World of Simpson mm-hmm. figures, and there is hundreds of those. I made a list because I don't want to get like random stuff. I made like a list of like 50. I think it was like 50. I'm like, I want to get these 50. So I made a list to kind of make sure they get out of hand.
Nice. Nice. That's awesome though. And they've made over a billion, I would imagine.
Oh, billion plus.
Billion
easy.
Plus, yeah.
Billion
oh,
plus
geez.
Easy. DVDs, Blu-rays, VHS tapes, CDs. There's full CDs of Simpsons singing songs and shit.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's wild. Currently, it is on its 34th season at the time of recording, because I mean it has no real sign of ending. Currently, there are 750 episodes. As of January 2023, seasons 35 and 36 have been announced.
Wow.
A theatrical film was released that grossed $527 million worldwide. The Simpsons have received a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Of course.
And it predicted the future.
Okay. Now we're getting into the goods.
Yeah, this is what brings Cult Talk Conspiracy to the world of Springfield.
I'm so excited.
I'm sure that a lot of people, most people, have been scrolling Facebook or Twitter or Instagram and saw some eye-catching headline with a cleverly done side-by-side photo of an actual event and an animated depiction claiming the Simpsons predicted it. It's a very common thing.
Oh, yeah.
Now, a majority of those can be found to be false with just a little research. I mean, it doesn't take a lot to debunk this stuff. But that's not to say all of them are easily debunked. When looking over the vast catalog of episodes, you know, 750 at this time, a movie and a handful of shorts, mm-hmm. it's easy to catch a couple of things even by accident. It's just probable at this point, honestly. To some reports, there are at least 30 predictions made by The Simpsons that have come true currently.
30.
That's what most people will hold up. Now, there's a lot you can get. People will take things like something looks like something, and you know, but there's 30 that people really hold up at this time that are like, these are predictions.
Interesting.
But I'm only going over three. You know, like I said, I'm only doing three that really stick out to me as, you know, outliers. They also do a really good job of showing the scope of reach of these predictions, because these predictions span everything from politics to religion to technology to world events to sports, to entertainment. I mean, the predictions span a vast, vast array of things.
Mm-hmm. Well, they touch all of that in the show, from what
I understand. Oh, yeah. The show is basically its own world. Like, there's so much. People all the time try to figure out where Springfield is.
Yeah.
Because Springfield does, they've never, definitively said it's in here or there.
I think I read something that said there's at least a town or a township named Springfield in every state of the U.S.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I think Matt Groening landed on that as being the town, mm-hmm. is that it's another one of those relatable elements. Everyone knows of a Springfield. There's Springfield, Ohio.
Is there a parallel universe in The Simpsons? Did Matt tap into a parallel universe and is now animating his?
Probably.
Oh boy.
It's very possible. The first prediction, I think, one that a lot of people are familiar with. I would say most people, if they don't know The Simpsons, they have at least encountered this prediction. And this is, of course, when The Simpsons predicted Donald Trump as president.
I was so hoping this was what we were going to talk about, because like this was the first time that I actually saw it and it came up on my radar. We're going to
that is the most well known of all the predictions.
Yes,
because everyone's seen it. I mean, when Donald Trump got elected as the 45th president of the United States, there was all of these, you know, that people were going wild. That's what really I think at the time leading up to that, it had kind of been a thing of like, oh, the Simpsons predicted a lot of stuff. But once this happened, I think people really got into it. Really, this conspiracy theory really became mainstream.
We were all like, what the fuck is this? Like, what?
On March 19th, 2000, the 17th episode of the 11th season, Bart to the Future aired. This episode sees the family en route to a picnic, but end up at a Native American casino. After disrupting a ventriloquist show, Bart is taken to the manager, who takes Bart on a vision quest to show him what would happen if he failed to change his behavior. The future of this vision quest sees Bart as a loner, failed musician living in the shadow of his much more successful sister, Lisa Simpson, who is the newly elected president of the United States. So he's living in her shadow.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
It's here that we get this bombshell prediction. Following her victory and proclaiming to be America's first straight female president, she makes it very, very clear. She's not the very first female president. She's the first straight female president. Lisa meets with her team to begin their plan of action. Get this time what seemed to be just a throwaway line. No one, and you'll find this is a common thread with these predictions. The time of airing the supposed predictions don't really ring true because they haven't happened yet. Mm-hmm. So say this conspiracy. But we get the line, as you know, we've inherited quite the budget crunch from President Trump.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. OMG.
It's a passing line that I'm sure at the time of airing, most didn't catch, or if they did, they simply laughed it off. Ha ha ha. A billionaire celebrity with no political experience being the president? Of course, if true, means horrible death for us all. But 16 years later, this line would take on new life as Donald J. Trump successfully ran and became the 45th president of the United States.
I think a lot of us are still in that wake of like, did it really happen? Are we sure?
Yeah,
it really
happened? I think like, so. It is pretty crazy to think like that happened.
It's a crazy world we're living in, y'all.
Now, I'll link this book in the description. Like I said, I bought this book, The Simpsons Secret by Lydia Pulteney and James Hicks. The link will be down in the description if you guys want to purchase that. A fantastic book all about the wild world of Simpson predictions. Great read, really interesting, do a lot of research. They have a nice section all about this topic. Dan Greaney, the writer of Bart to the Future, was interviewed by The Hollywood Reporter and explained, this just seemed like the logical next step before hitting rock bottom. In 2000, when writing the episode, Donald Trump wasn't this polarizing political figure at the time. You know, no. he was just a billionaire celebrity kind of pop culture guy. The writers were making fun of an outlandish scenario where someone with no political experience claimed the highest political office in the land. Greeny called it a warning to America.
Oh boy.
Not against Donald J. Trump, but rather to think about who we elected as our representatives is what it was. It wasn't the joke that, oh man, Donald Trump's gonna be president. It was that this guy his only defining characteristic is I'm rich.
Yeah.
Could become president. Like that was the joke, is that someone, he wasn't a politician. He doesn't have a political background. The guy's just rich and works his way into the office. And that's what it was. That was the joke. Following the 2016 election, this single comment became the focal point of articles, forum posts, and videos claiming this was evidence of the Simpsons predicting the future. As Greeny explained, at the time, it just seemed like an absurd concept to show how wild the world would be in the future past the year 2000. The idea isn't one that was wholly created by the Simpson writers, as Donald Trump himself had teased the idea of running for president several times.
He did that for the decades leading up to that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that was a huge deal.
Yeah, most notably during an interview with Oprah Winfrey, he stated, "I think I'd win. I'll tell you what, I wouldn't go in to lose." In that episode, in that interview too, he also was trying to get Oprah Winfrey to be his running mate, his VP. That didn't happen. But
he might have won a second term.
He may have.
I don't know.
That would have been a very interesting dynamic. I feel like a lot of his supporters would have been very confused.
By the
idea of Oprah Winfrey and Donald Trump run for president.
We would have had to have like a full sit down. Like we would have had to have the Oprah Winfrey interview with her running mate,
Donald Trump,
in order to understand what happened there. Like, and she is a fantastic interviewer. Like she is a fantastic interviewer.
She's been doing it for years.
Like,
I think her, the one of the greatest to ever do it.
Gosh, her whole life, man, her whole freaking life.
In 1999, 1 year before Bart to the Future, the book The America We Deserve, which highlighted proposed changes to the political policies by Donald J. Trump, was released. So he actually put a book out in 1999, of all these political policies and how he would improve on them or change them for the better. So was this episode really a glimpse into not just the future of Bart Simpson, but America itself? Or an off-the-cuff coincidence? Well, this wouldn't be the only example of the Simpsons foretelling the events surrounding our 45th president. I'm sure if you look into anything related to the Simpsons and Trump, one image in particular will surface. In June 2015, an iconic image made its way online of Donald J. Trump riding a golden escalator in Trump Tower, as supporters flocked in with pro-Trump signs. Shockingly, an almost identical image, down to the wording on the signs, the appearance of the supporters, can be found as animated by The Simpsons. But the only difference being the inclusion of Homer Simpson riding the escalator behind Trump. Proof of The Simpsons foretelling future events, right?
Yes.
Fake news. This image was actually from a Simpsons short called Trumptastic Voyage.
What?
Yeah, it was like an animated short where Homer meets Donald Trump and gets sucked into his hair, and it has like a voyage type deal. Yeah. This episode was actually released 1 month after the iconic image was put out, and intentionally parodied this image. Like they actually took inspiration from that picture included in the episode. This image, however, still to this day, is frequently shared across social media, where it gains reactions from people who fail to do their research and claim this is undeniable proof that The Simpsons sees into the future. And like I said, a lot of these predictions, if you look into it deep enough, you can find at least an explanation or a debunking of it. That image in particular. The fact they predicted Donald J. Trump, I think that is up for debate. Did they just, did they have their fingers so on the pulse of America that they were able to kind of predict that as being the next step, as things, regressed? As it being, or did they actually just go into the future and predict it? I think an interesting thing that I don't know if many people brought up, but like it's interesting in that episode, Bart to the Future, that Lisa follows Trump's presidency. It's Trump then her. And they never say, I don't think they ever say what number president she is. So I don't think it's anything like that. But like, it's interesting that, it's Trump then Lisa. Mm-hmm. When following Trump's presidency, we wouldn't get the first female president. We get the first female vice president.
Oh.
Which I think is kind of interesting that, following the Trump presidency, there would be a female in the cabinet.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's an interesting thing. Now, another interesting side note about that episode, Bart to the Future, is that during the Joe Biden presidential inauguration, Vice President Kamala Harris is wearing an outfit that is nearly identical to the outfit worn by Lisa in Bart to the Future. It is near identical. Whether or not that was by design or just so happened to be a thing, I don't know. But if you look at pictures side by side, you can see Kamala Harris and Lisa Simpson from the Bart to the Future episode, and they're wearing identical outfits.
OMG.
Yeah. So, I think a lot of things go into this when you're talking about the Simpsons of predictions. A lot of things go hand in hand as if it's a prediction or an influence.
Right.
Maybe whoever's dressing Kamala Harris that day, her stylist, maybe they were a fan of the Simpsons and were like, oh, this would be really cool if you wore this similar outfit. And it's a very good outfit. It's like a purple dress suit type deal. I mean, it's not like outlandish. So I kind of wonder if that was more of an influence rather than a prediction.
Yeah, I kind of thought the same thing with when we talked about Lady Gaga playing with the Super Bowl is like, was that something that was influenced and manifested by those particular individuals that carried with them into the future rather than a prediction? So I definitely, I see what you're saying there. That's just, it's crazy the parallels still.
Oh, yeah. It really is. Now, politics aren't the only field in which The Simpsons has had influence. We're going to talk about some big brain stuff here. Oh, this is a lot of stuff that I'm going to pull back the microscope. We're going to look back over like a huge, vast array because I'm not going to even attempt to explain some of this stuff. As part of the 10th season, episode 2, The Wizard of Evergreen Terrace, aired on September 20th, 1998. This episode sees Homer facing a midlife crisis and becoming obsessed with following in the footsteps of Thomas Edison as his inventor. Basically, Homer's having a midlife crisis that, you know, when he passes away, he's going to leave nothing in this world. So he decides, I'm going to become an inventor to, you know, make my claim to notoriety. I'm going to leave my mark behind. I'm going to invent something.
Mm-hmm.
It is notable, or at least relevant to us, because of a scene in which Homer, heavily invested in creating an invention to cement his legacy, writes a very complex mathematical equation on a chalkboard. Again, as with most of the Simpsons predictions, a passing gag that at the time of initial viewing doesn't stand out much. Especially with someone who admittedly is awful at math. I'm terrible at math. To me, it was numbers and squiggles on a board. I've seen this episode countless times and never picked up on this bit at all. But someone who did pick up on this bit is Nobel Prize winner physicist Dr. Simon Singh. Have you ever heard of the God particle?
Oh, gosh. The name, yes. What it means, absolutely not.
So the God particle, as it's called, but more accurately known as the Higgs boson, or the Higgs particle, is a fundamental particle that contributes to what gives mass to other particles and contributed to the creation of the universe. Basically, it's the particle that gives us mass.
Oh.
It's what defines mass. And at least the best I can understand, again, big brain stuff. But how does the Simpsons and the God particle come together?
Right.
What's the relation? Well, for decades, maybe centuries, I don't know how long the physicists have been trying to figure this out. For a long time.
Long, long time.
The Higgs boson was considered to be one of mathematics' greatest unsolved mysteries. People just couldn't put on, like, where does mass come from? What is the defining particle that defines mass? Until 2012, when the particle was detected inside the Large Hadron Collider, located at the France and Switzerland border, which I think that's something we should cover sometime, too, the Large Hadron Collider. It's that big ring. I'm sure you've seen on things where, you know, they're able to send like things through at like twice the speed of light.
Yeah.
Particles. Yeah.
Yeah.
Super as we should definitely do an episode on that sometime. Dr. Singh was working on this project, this being the achievement that earned him the Nobel Prize. Now, this is where I'm going to pull back the scope a million miles as I try to explain this part. So when following the seemingly random, complex equation chalked up by Homer, It is almost a near accurate match equaling to the Higgs boson. In fact, it is only inaccurate by 650 giga electron volts. According to Dr. Singh in his book, Dr. Singh did a book called The Simpsons and Their Mathematical Secrets, because apparently there's a bunch of mathematical things in The Simpsons. So the equation that he just, you know, jotted up on the board in 1998 is nearly an exact match to the equation that equals to the Higgs boson. Mathematics' greatest unsolved mystery.
And they've just got it in there.
Yeah, the equation that eluded some of the smartest people of their time was for 14 years found to be near complete in an animated sitcom.
Okay, let me take a second and digest that. Okay. So you're telling me this fucking... That's crazy. That's absolutely in fucking sane. Because exactly. Like, that, my very first thought was it a lucky guess? But... when you're thinking about like the probability of something like that, they're like, okay, lucky guesses, yes, they fucking happen, but it's like, how?
Well, we'll find out how. We're going to talk about it, but how? The Simpsons, the show defined by perennial oaf Homer Simpson. Who wrote the episode? Well, our friend Dan Greeny, who we spoke about earlier, did a majority of the work on this episode, but the gag in question was added in by writer David X. Cohen. Now, Cohen isn't your typical cartoon writer. Not at all. Beginning his career on another 90s staple, Beavis and Butthead, before moving on to The Simpsons and Matt Groening's other creations, because Matt Groening didn't just do The Simpsons. Matt Groening has two other shows that people are probably very familiar with, Futurama and Disenchanted. Those are also Groening creations. Cohen is a product of having both parents being biologists, which led to him having the desire to one day be a scientist. After graduating high school as a member of the New Jersey State champion mathematics team, he would attend college at the prestigious Harvard University. It was here he would earn a BA in physics and go on to attend the University of California, Berkeley, to earn a master's in computer science. This guy is a next level academic.
So first of all, if I were to tell anyone out loud, like, yeah, I'm going to join a competitive math team, they'd laugh right in my face. So the fact that... yeah, that's big brain. That was enough to be like, okay, he's super big brain. Okay.
Well, he went to Harvard University.
Harvard.
Got a BA in physics. Went to Berkeley. Got a master's in computer science. Dude is very, very intelligent. And ended up writing for The Simpsons. So when the script called for a mathematical joke, he was the go-to guy. Cohen contacted his former classmate, David Sheminovic, whose list of accolades includes stints at Yale University, where he earned a BS in mathematics and physics, as well as Columbia University, where he got his PhD.
Oh, beautiful.
These two collaborated on constructing the formula for the gag. So you have two people, graduates of Harvard, Yale, Berkeley, you got physics majors, mathematics, Columbia University. Mm-hmm. You guys got a PhD from Columbia University, one of the most prestigious universities in the world.
Oh, yes.
And they were like, okay, there's a gag that we need to have for this episode of Simpsons. Let's you and I write it. And the thing is on the board for maybe like a matter of seconds. I'm talking like 5 seconds max. It's a quick pan to Homer writing something and pan back. So was this episode a solution to mathematics' greatest mystery right in front of the world to see, or a stroke of genius by a collaboration between two intelligent and more than qualified individuals?
I could totally see it being like, yeah, we're going to solve the God particle and we're just going to put it in the Simpsons episode.
Drop it in the Simpsons.
Yeah, we're just going to drop it and just see what happens.
Yeah, this random episode in season 10 of The Simpsons.
I could totally drop it in there. Totally freaking see it. That's fucking hilarious. That, I mean, for, okay, there's layers to that one because you called two of probably the greatest minds in that generation into an episode for The Simpsons, which is absolutely grandiose and fabulous. I love that. And then they have this answer within the episode that is only there for 12 seconds, you said? Like, not very probably, long at all?
It's fat. It's not a focus of the episode. It's not like...
At all. Just
no, it's just a gag. It's just a little bit that they do of just Homer writing just something, you know, crazily advanced on a board.
That's crazy. Oh, that's insane. I love that.
Yeah, that one blew my mind when I heard about it. Now, I will say, we talked about a little, you know, go back a couple minutes where he said to you, in fact, that this equation's only inaccurate by 650 giga electron volts, which I guess is actually pretty big for physics. It sounds minute, but I guess overall it is pretty large. But the equation nonetheless is near complete. Like, it is as close to complete as anyone had gotten at that point. And it's just fucking in The Simpsons.
Jeez, Pete. I just imagine, like, you know, Dr. Singh just watching it, relaxing, watching an episode of The Simpsons, and then sees that and just goes, pause. Wait a minute. Hang on. What's this? And then thus begins work. So
if I was more interested in math, I'd probably read his book. Like, it's cool that it's got The Simpsons, but, like, I'm not that interested in math. I don't know that much about math. But I bet it would be interesting to read, like, what else they've done. Because it sounds like they have a pretty intelligent... Like, it's not just a bunch of dudes that write. Like, these guys are physicists.
Yeah.
Who write for The Simpsons. Like, it's nuts.
That's crazy. It sounds like The Simpsons as a show and as a team itself are very well-rounded people. Because, like, they're covering family. They're covering, you know, entertainment and school and, you know, politics. Everything that touches our lives as people, it seems like they're touching... in their show as well. It sounds like they're creating a sphere that's going to be so big every single person could watch The Simpsons, which I dig.
Absolutely.
I love it.
Absolutely. So we've talked about politics. We've talked about big brain math and physics. So let's talk about how one of The Simpsons' major world events that they predicted. Are you having fun, Bailey?
I am. This is freaking crazy. I need to watch the... I've actually wrote down these episode numbers so that... Because I'm like, I got to go watch these. I got to go. Excellent. I got to see it.
Well, let's keep the good times rolling. And let's talk about the time The Simpsons predicted 9/11.
Oh, Jesus. Time!
It happened.
Oh, my God.
So, the episode in question... aired September 27th, 1997. It's the premiere episode of season 9. So season 9, episode 1. The City of New York versus Homer Simpson is the title. This episode sees Homer's car borrowed by his comedically alcoholic best friend Barney Gumble, where it ends up abandoned between the Twin Towers in New York City. Now, to retrieve the iconic pink family sedan, the Simpsons have to go to the Big Apple.
Oh.
Now, of course, the mere reference of setting an episode taking place between the Twin Towers isn't enough to proclaim prediction. Twin Towers, the World Trade Centers, iconic buildings in not just New York City, but the world. I mean, they were they were iconic all over. Most people knew of the World Trade Centers or had seen them. So... obviously, if you're going to set an episode in New York City, you're going to have them in there. I mean, most things that took place in New York City, most films, entertainment, TV shows would at least have a passing reference to the World Trade Centers.
Oh yeah, I think even Home Alone, you see the World Trade
Center. Home Alone too.
Home Alone as well.
Following the family learning of the location of Homer's car, they try to figure out how they'll all travel to New York City. Lisa Simpson presents a magazine advertising bus tours. New York, $9 in big font, with 9 appearing right in front of an image of the World Trade Centers, creating the illusion 9/11.
That's crazy.
My phone out. I'll show you here real quick. Our listeners can go to Instagram and see this photo. I'll have it on the Instagram today. But I'll show Bailey now.
OMG.
There it is.
Oh, that is, wow.
Yeah, you see the kind of like the,
yeah,
like we're getting here, New York 9. Yeah,
analytics. Yeah. Oh my gracious.
I don't think I need to continue emphasizing how little these supposed predictions meant at the time of airing. No one thought much of this in 1997. However, following the tragic events of September 11, 2001, this episode would be revisited and become one of the most looked at examples of The Simpsons predicting the future. January of this year, 2023, one of the showrunners of the episode in question, Josh Weinstein, responded to the claim via Twitter. "I can tell you the unfortunate 9/11 was strictly because $9 seemed like the funniest low bus fare, and we wanted the World Trade Center in the ad since that's where this story takes place. Totally a coincidence."
Oh, wow.
I think it's kind of weird, like his explanation, like $9 being like the funniest number. Like, I don't know. That does make sense to me. I don't know. I'm not like a numerologist or anything like that, but
yeah,
I don't know. I'm just like $9. Just, I don't think that's a fair explanation.
I don't think it is either.
Satisfying explanation, I guess. Well, this explanation wasn't satisfying to some who haven't been satisfied by many of the claims made by the Simpsons staff that this was only an unfortunate coincidence. Now, I had to go on some very questionable forums and websites to gather what some people believe is the reason behind The Simpsons' incredible ability to allegedly predict the future. There's some wild forums out there. And here's what some people believe. Some people believe it to be because the creator, Matt Groening, is actually a Freemason.
Oh, boy.
Through the looking glass here, people.
We did. We really did.
As a member of this secretive organization that, according to some conspiracy theorists, have been manipulating the course of humanity for centuries, an organization, funnily enough, parodied by The Simpsons in the Season 6, Episode 12, Homer the Great, as the Stonecutters, one of my favorite episodes. As a member of the Freemasons, Matt Groening has access to the vast wealth of technology, such as smartwatches and FaceTime video calls, as seen in the 1995 episode Lisa's Wedding, that have long been kept from the public, and the secret world-altering plans, such as 9/11, which again, some conspiracy theorists do attribute that as being, a product of the Freemasons or the Illuminati.
Mm-hmm.
People believe that there's some sort of, puppeteer-type organization that did that intentionally. There are a number of very fringe QAnon adjacent groups, mm-hmm, who believe The Simpsons is actually a product of this all-controlling organization, who are using it to broadcast hidden clues to the masses.
Oh.
Which doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me. I don't know.
I mean,
but a lot of people believe that. A lot of people believe that.
Yeah. First of all, so to me, that points to like a good Samaritan within the organization, like trying to let the public know what's getting ready to happen.
Maybe Matt Groening's just trying to warn people.
Yeah. Or maybe it's like, let's see who can figure it out. That way we could target them as a more malicious intent.
Yeah. We've been targeted.
We have. Oh, boy.
We've stepped into the crosshairs.
If Ty and I go missing, just understand we are both within very, very good health.
Yeah, like, exactly. To this day, there are always claims of The Simpsons predicting world events, as recently as claims that foretold the ongoing conflict in the Ukraine with Russia and the United States involvement. There's like a picture you see online sometimes of like, it shows it's a fake picture that people have like done of like, I think it's like Putin and. Like it's a fake picture. I've seen it a couple times, but it's a fake picture that people are like, oh, this means that Ukraine was going to be invaded by Russia and the United States was going get involved. Mm-hmm. It's a fake picture people share online. And also the Titan submersible incident. People claim that The Simpsons predicted that just off of some passing, fake screenshot that people post.
Huh.
Because The Simpsons art style has become, pop culture you know, a very, very ingrained in the pop culture.
Oh yeah.
And it's also easy to emulate. You know, you'll see our cover art for this episode. All you got to do, you can go online, you can find a, you know, some way to get a Simpson image generated. It's, I think it costs, if you want to, I think there's some like websites you can upload like a picture and it'll generate a Simpsons version for like a price, you know, like $5, some shit like that.
Artists on Etsy make a killing doing that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, usually these claims are accompanied by, like I said, a very Simpson-esque supposed screenshot, and they can easily be debunked by, you know, doing a little bit of research. But things like these three instances that I laid out here are a little too weird. I think these supposed predictions are best summed up by a quote from Al Jean, a showrunner, writer, and producer on The Simpsons. He said, "One of our writers, the guy whose episode predicted Donald Trump as president, said it best. If you write 700 plus episodes and you don't predict anything, then you're pretty bad. If you throw enough darts, you're going to hit some bullseyes."
I concede to that.
And that's the end of that chapter. That's it.
Oh, boy.
The Simpsons predicting the future. I do have one thing I want to throw in here, too. Doing my research, I found another one that was kind of interesting. Yeah. I thought was fun. The Simpsons, like I said, now owned by Disney after the purchase of Fox, actually predicted this in 1998.
Oh, my.
The season 10 episode, When You Dish Upon a Star, they go to Hollywood. And there's a sign showing the 20th Century Fox logo. And then underneath it, it says a division of Walt Disney Co. In 2017, of course, Walt Disney purchased Fox, and it became a division of Walt Disney Co.
Oh, wow. So that's one that I'm like, out of all the other networks that you could have picked, you put those two together.
Yeah. Well, you got to think where the 90s, Disney was like a powerhouse.
Yeah.
Like, kind of like they were in the early 2000s, like in like the 2010s, when Disney bought like Marvel and Star Wars shit, that was like a powerhouse. In the 90s, it was also a powerhouse. So they had like all the animated stuff. So it wasn't like out of the realm possibility to think Disney would grow this big, monstrous, like conglomerate, you know, all-consuming monster that it is today. Mm-hmm. It's not out of the realm possibility, but it is very interesting if they predict that. Then, you know, 2017, you know, 20 years later, mm-hmm. The Simpsons would become part of Disney as part of that purchase.
Right. That's very interesting, because again, like, that could be like a goal that they were working towards, like a manifestation, if you will. But like, also, again, I mean, in the 90s, there was also like, you know, big Disney as well. There was, you know, Fox was also a huge one as well within its own right. So, and even still, like, to say that Fox, a giant powerhouse company, would be bought by another powerhouse company, that might have been a little dangerous to say on your own network. Like, wait a minute, what?
It's so surprising to me that Disney owns Simpsons now. Cause like, excuse me, there's some pretty like interesting, like the Simpsons was very like critical of Disney mm-hmm. in like the earlier seasons. They made a lot of references toward like Walt Disney's, you know, Aryan, you know, affinity.
Oh, yeah.
They made a lot of reference to that in the episodes. There's a lot of stuff that I was like, man, it's kind of surprised that Disney owns them now, because they took some pretty nice jabs at the Walt Disney Company in the 90s.
We were also way bolder on television in the 90s too.
Yeah.
What were we watching? We were watching, I think, like Lethal Weapon or something that I think was rated like PG-13 in the 80s and 90s. And I was like, you could not fly saying this shit today.
No.
Like, these movies are penguins. They ain't going to fly here. Like, that was freaking amazing. Okay. So you've definitely made a Simpsons fan out of me. Let's start there. So now I wrote down all these episodes. I'm going to go watch them. It's going to be so exciting. I'm so happy. But like, OMG, there's so much. Like, so the 9/11 thing also gets me too, because it's a funny number. It's just, why not make it 5 then? Why not
make it like a $5? Five, like, I don't know. That was like not a satisfying explanation to me. I'm sure it's just an unfortunate coincidence. But to say, oh, we picked 9 just because it's a funny number, I was like, I don't know. Like, that doesn't read to me. I wasn't like laughing at the idea of $9.
No,
I don't know.
No.
It's just like, It's really weird that that's the explanation that they're staking, when it doesn't make any sense to me.
Me neither, honestly, because it's like, if there was a conversation where it's like $10 bus tours and then someone was like, no, let's make it $9, why not disclose that conversation? Yeah, be like, well, yeah, originally it was going to be 10, and then we decided to do 9 to try to get it lower. And because as soon as
that's the highest single digit number.
Yeah.
You know,
that would have been a more satisfactory answer. So that one to me, I'm not a super fan of, but that's freaking crazy the way that that happened. Because when was that episode released? 97?
Yes, that one was 97. I mean, my book back up here. That was 97, September 27th, 1997.
Interesting.
It's very interesting. It's definitely like one of the darker predictions people kind of reference, because the other stuff's like, oh, you know, political thing, technology, science, the, you know, global terrorism attack.
Yeah.
Yeah. It spans the gambit of what symptoms have predicted.
That's for sure. So the most shocking one to me was definitely the image of Trump on the golden escalator. That shocked me to all crap and gone. That was actually from a little short that was done after the fact.
People get it. People flip it and, you know, claim that this is like proof, but it's like, no, it happened the other way. Like the Simpsons was intentionally parodying that image, because it's like this very absurd image of, you know, Donald Trump riding a golden escalator in a building he owns with supporters of him around. Like it's an absurd image. So
because I remember looking at that photo and his wife is standing right next to him, and it's in the same exact outfit that she's wearing on the escalator as well. And it was just because Trump kind of has like a generalized suit that he wears. But his wife is a huge fashionista, so her outfits change all the time. So I do remember, upon looking at that photo, how strange it was that the outfit was mirroring. So now hearing that, okay, it was done after the fact, like, okay, this now makes more sense. I'm a little upset that it didn't happen the way that I was originally told that it happened, but I will forgive those.
So. I feel like if it happened the other way, if it happened the way people will claim it, it's like that would be like undeniable proof. Like it'd be like, okay, let's what is going on here? Like, I feel like that would be a little too much. Like it would break the world of conspiracy theory, and it'd be conspiracy fact at that point.
Yes, Matt would be quarantined as a time traveler.
Oh, absolutely.
He would go missing. He would be in a lab somewhere.
It would be a huge deal if it happened the way people claim it happened.
No. Oh, my gosh.
But yeah, I don't think it was. It's not definitive proof. But there is, you know, not to say that this conspiracy theory is by any means debunked, because I think it is pretty shocking the number of times they have predicted things that have come true. And he's just little passing gags.
Yeah. Like, I actually really want this book, The Simpsons and Mathematical Secrets. I don't quite know how big brain that's going to be, but I kind of just want to.
Well, it's written by a Nobel Prize winner.
That's going to be really big brain then. That might be
big brain. Yeah.
That I might need like a cipher along with that book. I'm not going to lie to you, like a little dictionary.
Well, your dad's a physicist, right?
He is. Yeah.
Yeah. So I can consult with him.
Yeah. Be like, Dad, I read a new chapter.
Ask him about the Higgs boson.
Oh, yes.
The God particle.
Yes.
But yeah, this was a very fun episode for me to do. Like I said, I haven't had any chances to talk about The Simpsons on Cult Talk Net. So for me to get the chance, I wanted to relish in it and talk a lot about it. I got really into this episode because it was super fun. I came up with this concept for this episode back earlier this year. And I remember like, how am I going to write that? How am I going to do it? Because like, there's so much. So I think by picking these three outliers out, that's the best way to do it. Because I could easily do a follow-up to this, but I don't think any of the predictions are as groundbreaking as these three. Mm-hmm. And these three really span the gambit of politics, science, world events. Mm-hmm. I think it's pretty interesting the way they tackle all these different things that just came true. Like,
absolutely. No, this was awesome. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, and the funny thing too about reading a lot of these, you know, reading this book in particular, you know, The Simpsons Secret, a lot of the predictions are never like focal points of the episode. Like it's never like a major plot point. It's always like a passing sight gag or a line. Like it's never like, let's stop and let's focus on this thing. You know, it's just something that, you know, passes by you. So when it comes, there could be episodes today that people are watching of The Simpsons. Like I said, it's just, it's never stopping. It's never, I don't know when they're going to end. Like, I thought for sure The Simpsons was going to end at season 30. I was like, season 30, it's a round number. Mm-hmm. And like, no other shows ever came close to that. No. Surely they're going to end at season 30. And now we have, you know, season, you know, 35, 36 announced. They got to make it to 40, I'd imagine. Oh, 40, yeah. They'd have to make it to 40. So I don't know when it's going. But I imagine there could be things that people are watching today where there's a line that just, you know, whizzes by you. And, you know, 10, 12 years later, people are going to look back on that and be like, that is true. There is a channel I watched. God, I should have written down the name. I'll link them in the description below. They did like a plot chart showing like all the Simpsons seasons and like how many predictions people claim to be true from each season. Like it's obviously like, you know, the early seasons, there's a lot and it kind of dwindles as time goes on. But I think that's the way it would be, because like I said, there's probably things that are happening today in the Simpsons that we're not going to realize for another decade.
Right.
Like, holy shit. That was a prediction. So that makes sense to me. But yeah, the early episodes, the early seasons, there's a ton that people reference back in there. I think the smartwatch thing from Lisa's wedding, I don't necessarily think that is, you can call that a Simpsons prediction, because that's a sci-fi concept that people have always had. Like, you know, oh, you have holograms in your wrist, or you're gonna be able to video chat with someone. Like, that was all just shit you could find in like old like B movies from sci-fi shit from the 80s and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't think that is you can call that a Simpson prediction. That's just a sci-fi influence.
Yeah, my first thought was Star Trek and Star Wars. Like, they have
Star Trek is another show that people, that has a shocking number of predictions in it.
Really?
Yeah, it's like The Simpsons and Star Trek are two shows that people will reference a lot of having these, you know, very weird, ominous predictions.
Interesting.
I'm not a Trekkie, so I don't know a lot about the Star Trek
stuff. See, my dad is also a Trekkie, along with being a physicist, so now I have to talk with him. This is going to be a very interesting conversation between Papa Mosley and I. I'm not going to lie to you guys. It's going to be like, what is this coming from?
I want to do some research. I want to see if maybe I could do a Futurama episode.
Yes.
But I got to do my research, see if there's enough meat on the bones there. But I know there has been some rumblings of Futurama having a few predictions. So I'll have to see if there's enough meat on the bones for that.
Yeah, I have watched a little bit of Futurama. That one is a fun show.
Love Futurama.
Those are, they're so cool.
I never got too much into Disenchanted, the Netflix show. I never got that much into it. Mm-hmm. Just wasn't as good as The Simpsons, I don't think. But Futurama, fantastic show. And that's coming back, so.
Yay! Oh, yeah, it is. Yes. That's when we started watching it. Me, Ben, and Eric was when they had announced that it was coming back.
I have mixed feelings on that, because I think that series ended so perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
I think the ending of the where the series ended as of this date is just so perfect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just Fry and Leela just you want to redo it, like going back and just redoing the whole timeline just because they wanted to. Like, I love that so much. It's just a fun way. I mean, it's just a satisfying end. So I have mixed feelings about it coming back, but
yeah.
If it doesn't interfere with the way that the series ended,
yeah,
I'm fine with, you know, if it's some like, you know, here's some more shit in the middle, that's fine. But as long as it doesn't interfere with the ending of the original ending of the series, I'm fine with it. But
yeah,
I have mixed feelings.
I'm kind of that way with Frasier coming back too. Like, I love
Frasier's coming back.
Yes.
Who the fuck's asking for Frasier to come back?
Everyone. Me.
So, some of these properties they revive. It's just like, what are we? It's just crazy.
Yeah, like
the shit. I just blows my mind sometimes the shit that we're rebooting.
I know. Well, the Kelsey Grammer's coming back and they're bringing his son back. And one thing Kelsey Grammer did say was Frasier has not changed a single bit. So I'm anxious to see what that is. I'm not going to lie. I've got mixed feelings because we all know what Hollywood's been doing today.
Oh, I know.
So I'm a little nervous, but I'm excited. I'm very excited about that.
Yeah.
Ty, this was freaking awesome. You definitely.
I'm still holding my, I'm still like, dreading the day they announce like a Xena Warrior Princess reboot. No. I am dreading the day that happens. No. Man, that was a good fucking show. Mm-mm. And they'll ruin it. Mm-mm. Or like if they do like a Legacy reboot, I don't want to see that. Like, I'm just let that show. I just feel like that's a show that someone's going to do at some point. I just don't want them to.
I just don't know who else you could do that is going to even become in comparison with the grand goddess Lucy Lawless. I just don't know who you would like. Even I have no freaking idea.
She's still pretty fit. I could see her coming back for just a random follow up season, but I don't think it needs it. Like just the IP that Hollywood just churns out, like revives. Like, what are you doing? Make something original.
Thank you.
Do something original for once.
Thank
Jesus.
You. Thank you.
Yeah, it just blows my mind. But I'm glad we got to talk about The Simpsons, though.
You've made a fan out of me. I'm definitely going to be watching some episodes now. Like, this is freaking cool. That it sounds like a fun show. Like, to someone who...
It's a blast. I love The Simpsons.
Oh, beautiful. For someone who's, like, never sat down and, like, actually watched The Simpsons before, I could definitely feel, like, see where I could, like, dig it and have some fun with this. So, Ty,
I always suggest, like, seasons 3 to 16 are a pretty good place to... Because The Simpsons is not chronological. You can watch it any order. Nice. Like, they don't really, it's not like they really reference, like it's, each episode is kind of standalone.
Oh, okay.
So it's not like a sitcom where like you have to watch, you know, episode 6 to know what's going on in 7. It's not like that, which I love that about it. But I always suggest 3 to 16. 1 and 2 are also great series becomes, because around like season 2, they get into it a little bit. Season 1 is like really grounded and like, you know, kind of slow paced if you're going to, you know, take it with what everything else is, because they try to ground it as being a sitcom. Mm-hmm. Season 2 gets a little more loose with, you know, using the cartoon aspect of it and, you know, going to big places and doing wild, wacky things. But season 3 to 16, I think, are really great seasons. As the seasons progress, it gets less and less good. There's fewer and far between good episodes categorize as good episodes, but like season 9, one of my favorite seasons, season 7, things like that. But nice. There's good stuff all the way through them, but yeah, they're great. But yeah, we got to talk about it, got to tell you about The Simpsons. We got to go over like some really interesting world events, political events, scientific big brain physics stuff. They run the gambit. You can look up, there's a Simpsons prediction for most things, sports, technology,
they've like predicted like Super Bowl outcomes too. Like, I just thought
I'm not sure. I'll look into that. I haven't read any of that, but I wouldn't be surprised. As much as they predicted, I wouldn't be shocked at all. I know, like, there's another thing talk about, like, the influence over prediction. The Albuquerque has a baseball team who renamed themselves the Albuquerque Isotopes. Because people are like, oh, that's a prediction. It's like, but you can actually find where they were like, oh no, we were renaming the baseball team. In one of the earlier episodes of The Simpsons, they actually have the Isotopes, which are the Springfield Isotopes, as the baseball team. In the show, in the episode, the Isotopes leave Springfield and move to Albuquerque and become the Albuquerque Isotopes. So like, you can even see like where they're like, oh no, we renamed them because of the episode. The episode didn't predict we were going to become the Albuquerque Isotopes. We intentionally changed the name to the Isotopes because of The Simpsons.
Yes.
So there's stuff like that you have to weed through when you're reading about the supposed predictions.
That's freaking cool. This is awesome. This is so cool. Ty, you did absolutely fabulous.
Thank you.
This was awesome. You had kind of been gearing me up in preparation and the lead up to recording this episode. And I mean, buddy, you knocked this out of the frickin' park. Like,
thank you.
Oh my gosh. It's gone to all the different Springfields. It's amazing. This was awesome. I can't wait to watch some of The Simpsons and, you know, try to get some of my own opinions on some of these different things.
You know what else is fantastic? Next month, Cult-tober.
So excited. I'm so, it's great. It's here, guys. It's happening. It's happening.
It's happening. Cult-tober, October 1st. It's coming. And we are doing, in Cult-tober, every Tuesday, we're going to be here with you guys. 5 episodes of Cult Talk Conspiracy and we got some really cool surprises in line. Mm-hmm. Some really good guests.
Yes.
We're going to have some interesting new formats we're going to try out. Cult-tober is huge this year. If you guys aren't familiar with Cult-tober, Cult Talk Net, it's our big Halloween event we do where all the shows join in. Cult of Campbell, Cult of Lore, the whole Cult Talk Net gang gets together and we do a bunch of movie reviews. It's huge. This is the biggest Cult-tober we've ever done. Cult-tober 3.
Yes.
And we're going to be kicking things off. Our first episode of Cult-tober, when we're coming back here, we'll be back here October 3rd. And we are doing a very special episode of our Encounters episodes we do. If you guys are familiar with those, they're the episodes where we kind of go over like real life encounters of, so-and-so, alternate dimensions, Men in Black, all that stuff. We are doing a real life vampire encounters episode, yes, October 3rd, with our very special guests, our friends, Matt and Josh, of the Farthest Reaches podcast.
We're
TFR.
So excited.
Yeah, they've become pretty good friends with us here in the since we met them at Loveland Frog Festival. So we were like, we got to have those guys back.
Yes.
We did an episode of Cross Examinations with them, and we couldn't wait to have them back. So we invited them on to talk about some real life vampire encounters. Not the fake Bram Stoker stuff. We're talking about real life vampire encounters.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I cannot wait for that episode.
There's not going to be any sparkly motherfuckers on this episode.
No Twilight vampires. No Twilight. Sadly, Mike disappointed.
So
Mike loves Twilight.
Here's the thing: I was a Twilight teenager. I was a Twilight teenie because I had an entire wall in my bedroom that was just dedicated to Twilight posters. I have since renounced that. And Michael,
you should dig up your old posters and give them to Mike.
I still have them. Decorum. My mom keeps
give them to Mike. He can frame them and put them in his new apartment.
I probably will. I have to go. This is beautiful. Now I have Christmas presents for everyone.
There you go. Yeah, Mike's a big Twilight fan.
So if you have any,
that's that, not being a gaslighting asshole like you usually am. I'm being serious. Mike loves Twilight.
He does.
So
I always forget.
Yeah, I made fun of that for years. Well, me and him were roommates back in our early 20s. I remember he was like, oh, he's like, they're good movies. And he like was like, let's sit down and watch, and I bet you'll like him. I made it through the first movie, half the second one. I was like, I fucking hate this. I tapped out. I was like, I am not watching another fucking sparkly vampire movie.
I watched it so much. I had the entire first movie, the first Twilight, their entire dialogue memorized from beginning to end.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. I watched it that many times. It was crazy.
The only time I've ever done that with a movie, The Scorpion King with The Rock.
Oh,
me and my cousin had the whole like final battle between The Rock and the villain. The entire battle, like choreographed. And the dialogue, everything down. It was insane. We had that. We had these like wooden swords my dad made me.
Oh my gosh.
And we would go out in the yard and we would play that final battle. And we had it choreographed to a T. It was insane.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's
amazing. I love Dwayne The Rock Johnson. I love the Scorpion King.
He's great.
But yeah, that's the only movie I've ever done that with. But yeah. But we're talking about real vampires. Next
yes.
episode, October 3rd, as part of Cult-tober, and all month we're going to be releasing episodes and a ton of Cult-tober exclusives. Cult-tober begins October 1st with our special kickoff episode, Sunday, October 1st, Hocus Pocus.
Woohoo!
What better way to kick off the Halloween season?
Love
so
it.
Make sure you join us for that because we cannot wait. It's going to be such a fun time. But I think that does it for us here, Bailey.
I think so too.
It's time for us to get on out of here and bid Springfield adieu.
Yep, I've got Simpsons episodes to go watch.
Yep, tell Homer and Marge and Lisa and Bart, Maggie, all them bye. We got to get back to the real world, unfortunately. No. I've been Ty.
I've been Bailey.
Make sure you guys follow us on all of our social media at Cult Talk Net, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, all the things. I think Mike made us a Threads because that's the new thing now. So we do have at Cult Talk Net threads. You can follow Cult of Campbell, comes in on Mondays. Cult Talk Conspiracy, of course, we come out every other Tuesday, except for next month, where we're every Tuesday. And Cult of Lore, our Warhammer lore-based podcast, comes out every first and third Thursday. And they do a really cool video episode on youtube.com/culttalknet. And until next time, question everything.